You're listening to Sound Effect on KPLU. I'm Kevin Kniestead in for Gabriel Spitzer this week, and we're examining all different points of no return on the show. And for our last story, I'm joined by Sound Effect senior producer Arwin Nix. Hello, Arwin.
Hi, Kevin.
So this next story is about many points of no return.
So many points of no return. The story starts in 2005 when Amelia Bono and Brian Yeager first meet. They were both working just down the street from where we are now in Belltown.
I remember the first time I saw him walk by. He's just a person that you see and you don't forget.
I was bartending at the Lava Lounge, and she was a waitress or a hostess at Mama's. And she used to stalk me.
He's a tall, skinny Jew from Texas with huge brown eyes and the darkest brown eyelashes.
I had a girlfriend. I was completely unaware of her. She would, like, watch me walk up and down the street and kind of was crushing on me from afar.
Eventually, I started going into the Lava Lounge.
She was just young and beautiful and a little crazy. Could tell by the way she was looking at me. She wanted to kiss.
I knew I was in love with Brian after speaking to him three times.
One day, I guess she kind of seduced me one day at the Lava Lounge. We ended up staying after.
At the end of the third conversation, he just sort of looked at me and he said, "Why don't you walk down to the end of the bar?" I walked down to the end of the bar and he looked at me and he said, "I want you to kiss me really softly on the lips." And I did.
Emily and I kind of had like the typical, you know, really sexy, heavy few days.
I was the kind of electrified in a way that I think only happens a couple of times in a life. I mean, it was just something I was certain of then and I'm certain of now.
Just something's really happening here. You know what I mean? It was just that kind of, you could feel it. The energy was there, you know? But we didn't plan on being together 6 years, but
it was absolutely necessary that I make this person realize that we are in love.
It just happened. You know what I mean? Like we knew we were going to fall madly in love with each other. It was just, everything was perfect.
He looked at me and he was like, "All right, I'm going to break up with my girlfriend tonight." And then he said, "Do you steal things?" And I was like, "No." And he walked me into this back closet of the back bedroom, which 4 years later became our bedroom. And he opened up a locked box that was sitting on the floor of the closet. And he took out a copy of The Catcher in the Rye. That was a first edition copy. And he said, "I want you to know that I play music and I always will. And I'm never gonna make any money. And when it comes down to it, I'll sell this book, and that's my plan. That's how I'm going to make it work. But I'm not ever going to be like a normal guy." And I was like, "All right."
It was never dull. I mean, we were always talking, constantly challenging each other, talking about everything. I loved her brain so much, and I loved just being with her and having her around me and living together and all that. Loved it a lot.
We just instantly started to belong to each other.
She was my best friend, like my absolute best friend.
Describe the house for me physically. What did it look like?
500 West Republican was like probably the most special house in all of Queen Anne.
That house was a total anomaly.
Anybody that saw it, like if you walked in and you saw it, everybody had the same reaction. It was just a magical little spot.
It faced into this forest that was like above Elliott Street.
You can't even see the house from the road. It was right where Republican dead end.
It had a huge deck that wrapped around the back half and was supported by stilts.
With an almost completely unobstructed panoramic view. Beautiful light.
However, I will take credit that I deserve for always feeling a sense of doom about that house.
You would have felt it. Like nobody walked in that house and didn't feel it.
And it wasn't even creepy. It was just like a dark power that this house had.
Did you ever see Evil Dead? You know, it kind of looked like that.
And it was so isolated. Like we could sit in the yard, in the front yard in our underwear, and we could bash the drum kit at 4 a.m. and nobody even knew we were there. Like the UPS guy couldn't find it.
I loved it. I could live in that. I like that kind of energy and magic, you know what I mean? And it's like, if it did spook me, I just wouldn't believe in it. She didn't want to move into it. She was terrified of it.
It was cheap and it was gorgeous, and there was no reason for me to not move in there, but I didn't want to.
It's just funny that we waited so long, because I loved living with her so much, and she brought so much life to that house. It was unbelievable. I mean, she painted the walls, which I was like, I never even considered.
I got rid of all of the bad art. I filled it with plants. It worked. Like, we were able to reinvent the emotional blueprint of the house.
Like, it kind of took the evil out a little bit, like the eeriness out of it a little bit. It was still kind of an eerie place because it was just so old.
It still never felt safe to me.
So why did you two break up?
Why did we break up? Oh, that question.
Why did we break up?
At some point about, like shortly after I moved into the house, he joined this band that just was going to tour all the time, and that is what he's always wanted.
I know 4 or 5 months doesn't, it's not that much, but when you spread it out over a year, it was hard for me to be home.
There's no part of me that ever wants to make the person I love feel kept, even if in some ways that means that they are moving away from me, I guess.
I think we just wanted to sleep with other people. I mean, that was just bottom line. Like, we wanted to kiss other people, and it was really confusing and really difficult because I loved her so much.
I just sort of woke up one day and realized that I felt like an independent operator, and I didn't feel like Brian was my person anymore. I felt like I was my person.
It wasn't like, you're out of my life or I can't talk to you for a while, or it wasn't like that at all. Like, there wasn't even that desire, you know? It was just, I need to go do other things for a while.
You know, I had fallen in love with him when I was 20 years old, and I needed to be with other people. I needed to have different experiences. I needed to live in a studio apartment with all my own things and have sex with boys and girls and do whatever I wanted and not grow up yet.
I was gonna go on tour, and then when I got back, she was gonna be gone.
I remember just like laying in bed, barely speaking to each other for like 3 days before he left. And then I remember getting out of bed and looking at, like, you know, the garden we had planted, and we were holding hands, and he was just like, Amelia, what are we going to do with this beautiful house? And I was like, we'll figure that out when you're on tour.
I'm leaving, and she's just sobbing. I mean, just sobbing.
I was like stunned at myself that I had actually made this decision, and I just laid in our bed and just soaked it with my tears.
We're just kissing her and kissing her and kissing her, and she's crying so hard. I mean, I can just, it's like her face is soaking wet. I can taste the tears on her lips, you know? Like, she's just, her eyes are closed and she's sobbing, and I'm, you know, it's just like kissing, and I have to go. I mean, my band's outside waiting for me.
He just came over to me and he kissed me, and he said, I love you, Amelia. I'll see you on the other side of this. And I mean, I really think we both thought that that's what was going to happen.
Got in the van, and it was this, I just had the heaviest feeling inside of my body.
And then he left, and then he was gone. And then I was in this house by myself.
It felt so hard to leave, you know? I guess I wish I didn't. But you, what do? You have to go, you know?
The house had become a place that I just did not want to be. I called my best friend at the time, and I just told her, things have gotten so bad that I don't feel like I can keep myself safe. I can't be here, and I don't have anywhere to go. Will you please come pick me up? And then Brian called me. He was just coming unglued on the phone, screaming sadness at me. And I just said, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you right now. I'm trying to get out of this house. I'm getting out tonight. I have to. And I'll talk to you in a couple of days. And then I got off the phone, and my friend and I went outside and smoked a cigarette on the back porch, We put our cigarettes out in an ashtray that was sitting on the arm of a chair. And then we walked back inside and I looked at her and I said, all right, just help me get out of here without burning this f-ing house down. We went over to Rooster, who was sitting on the couch. I sat next to her and I was petting her and I was like, okay, Rooster, I'm really sorry to do this to you, but I gotta get out of here. I can't be here anymore. It's not healthy for me. I'm sorry that I'm leaving. I'm sorry that Brian's always leaving. I'm sorry that this place feels like hell, but I just have to go and I love you. And then we just walked out the front door and my best friend looked at me and said, it's weird that you just said that thing about fire because it totally smells like fire out here. And I was like, huh. And then we just left.
When, you know, when somebody calls you early in the morning like that, you know something's up.
I looked at my phone at 7 a.m. and there were 6 missed calls from Brian's twin brother, Nathan. And I just immediately knew that the house had burned down.
I just said, Brian? I said, yeah. And he said, everything's gone. And he said, everything's gone. Your house burned down.
And I called him and all I heard were just sirens and screams. And he was just screaming, you're alive, you're alive. You have to come here, everything's gone.
Did you know that Amelia was okay?
Oh yeah, he didn't call me before. He knew she was okay. Cause he thought she was dead. And you know, my cat too, he was trying to find Rooster, so.
I mean, I got there and they were like, I immediately was approached by the arson investigator.
They can't find Rooster.
And they had pen drawing of the house.
And I remember just kind of putting my hand on my abdomen and saying her name.
They were like, we need to talk to you about some stuff. And I was like, am I going to go to jail if I did this? And they were like, no. I was like, all right, why don't you show us on this drawing exactly where you smoked and where you put the cigarette out?
Her too. You know what I mean? Kind of like, really? Everything and her.
It was just like this long, slow burn that lasted all night, and then it was finally just like consumed in a blaze.
What a way to go.
All my dresses, all my grandmother's dresses, every photograph I've ever taken, every love letter, all of the evidence that I had ever existed.
None of it meant anything to me, like the possessions and the stuff. Like, I didn't care about it, it was gone. As hard as that was, there was also something kind of like liberating about it. I had a firebox in the back bedroom and I asked her to get that. I think that's when she really started crying. And then they came out with it. Whatever, I don't know, it seemed like a minute later, but it was probably 15 minutes later because we were talking. And then she just started sobbing and all she kept saying was, they have it, they have it.
There was his like locked box that had the catcher in the rye in it.
And there was a lot of joy and elation in her, you know what I mean? Like she felt like, we got something out of the fire, you know what I mean? Like something came out. Like.
So when you come back, you end up getting some money from the insurance that you have.
70K.
So what did you do?
I traveled. I took off. At first, I begged Amelia to come with me.
I was like, we can't get back together. We're not supposed to. Not right now. Maybe not ever. And I think it's going to be really hard not to just like fall into each other's arms because we love each other and we've just gone through something that is so unique and so isolating that like, how are we supposed to not lean on each other right now, you know?
And she decided she didn't want to do that. She had her own path, her own road to go down. And so I went to Asia.
I just like drove around with a rotating cast of characters to different places collecting things that people were giving me.
Nobody there knew my house burned down. Nobody there knew I'd just broken up with in a six-year relationship. Like, nobody knew me. And that's why I had to leave. I mean, everybody here that I knew.
Bands were playing shows, and like everywhere I'd ever worked was like doing a clothing drive.
So I had to leave. I wanted to leave and go somewhere and just breathe and walk, be really, really slow, be very intentional.
And then it was like, well, I need garbage cans. We'll keep this box. I need a shower curtain.
I didn't need a couch. I needed time, you know? I didn't need a new house. I needed time.
Simultaneously, along with this just like crushing, interrelated, like huge dark cloud of bad feelings, I was just being like lifted through it by humanity in this way that like it was completely transformative. It made me feel like connected to other people in a way that I totally took with me, you know? And it made me feel so lucky.
I remember being in Burma and I'd wake up and I'd just sit on this like log on the Bay of Bengal, looking at this green, beautiful green ocean alone and just crying and thinking about her and wanting her to be there so bad with me. I didn't understand why I was there alone.
How is your relationship to physical possessions different now?
I have ghost things that I like sometimes, like even today, I'll be like, oh, I want to hear this record. And I'll go over and start looking for it. I'm like, oh yeah, old record collection.
I mean, I think that it really just made me certain of just the ephemeral nature of all things, whether it's a love affair that you think is going to last your whole life or an article of clothing or whatever. I mean, I'm not trying to say that it made me totally not materialistic, but I haven't lost anything since then that I've thought about the next day.
I'm just now, in the last like 3 months, getting to where I'm settling into a home.
Just in the last 3 months?
Yep. That's how long it's taken me. Like, I really, for a long time, just was like, I don't need anything and I can live like this forever. And then when I did like get an apartment, I bought one bowl, you know, two coffee cups, one coffee maker. Now I have a coffee cup collection, you know, and a lot of forks.
Is there anything that you're glad burned?
I mean, kind of everything.
Yeah, all of it.
Because my life couldn't ever look the way it does without all of that getting erased, and I really like my life.
I don't have to ever move it again. I don't have to ever pack it. I don't ever have to worry about it.
And I really like the person that I am because this happened to me.
So you and Amelia are still really close.
Yeah.
I mean, we're like best friends.
To me, I had to bring her closer and closer to me because it was, what a horrible thing to feel, you know? How gnarly is that?
It's like, if you can get through that with somebody, it's just not on the table that we would ever not be close.
Because we know each other so well. I mean, so intimately, you know? Like, when you spend 6 years with somebody like that, like, you build something pretty special. Or we did, at least.
You know, I think that it would be really easy to have something like this happen and live scared because of it, you know? But I think that the opposite thing happened to both of us, and that's really beautiful.
All right, that's all I got.
Cool.